What's up, Echo Church? It's great to see you all today. I want to just say a big welcome to all of our campuses, our North San Jose campus, South San Jose, my personal favorite, Sunnyvale campus, as well as those of you who are joining us today online. We're so glad that you're joining us today. I think God has something really special for us today. My name is Philip Pattison, and I lead a movement that started right here at Echo Church called Foster the Bay. And we help churches provide loving homes for children in foster care. And I'm stoked to be with you for a few minutes to share with you out of God's word. Let me just begin our time with a story, if I could. Let me tell you about a beautiful little girl. Within hours of being born, this little one was placed in foster care. And by the time she was 3 months old, she'd already been cared for by four different moms. Now, statistics will tell us that the outlook on this little girl's future is bleak. Some of you know similar stats, that 3% of foster youth will ever go on to earn a college degree, and 71% of girls who age out of foster care will be pregnant by the time they're 21. Only half of kids who age out of foster care will have a job by in their mid-20s, and half will have a substance addiction, and a third will live on the streets. So this little girl has just like this world of statistics just fighting against her, and she's going to need every bit of help that she can get. Well, a year and a half ago, my wife and I, we decided, you know, this little girl's story, it's not going to end like this. Her story will not end like this. And so we began to foster this little girl. So for the last year and a half, we've been pouring our lives into her. In fact, take a look. This is her here. And I'm really excited to share with you that in 27 days, we're going to be moving from her foster family to her forever family. And so we'll be adopting her, which we are very, very excited about. But one thing that's also true is that she is just one of literally hundreds of kids that enter into foster care every single year here in Santa Clara County. And the fact is, every one of these kids have a name, and every one of them have a story, and every one of their stories matters to God. And because their stories matter to God, their stories matter to us. Let me tell you about a couple other kids. Let me tell you about a boy and a girl, a brother and a sister. When they were real young, they were removed from their home because of just extreme domestic violence. And they were immediately separated. And so the little girl would be placed into this well-off family in the city. And the little boy would be placed into a kind of a rural farm area. And the little girl would grow up to just have a really deep concern, a deep care for what was going on around her. And so she would actually one day enter into public service. The little boy would grow up, and he too had this big heart, and so he would actually one day end up in the military. And actually, this little boy would go on to become a hero. You probably have even heard of him, in fact. He would go on to become a hero, not simply, though, because he saved some of his fellow soldiers or even because he saved his nation. This little boy would grow up to be a hero because he saved his universe. Some of you know him well. This happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. At North San Jose, I see people like wiping their eyes and like, wait, you just told me the plot line of Star Wars. Yes, I did. I was telling you about Luke and Leia Skywalker. My friend Chris did a TED Talk recently, and he did on foster care and adoption, and he talked about that. He talked about how it's interesting when you look at it. Luke and Leia are not alone in the film industry. And that's amazing, actually, when you think about how many characters in our most well-loved stories and films that the same characters that kind of walk through these similar journeys. Like they walk through these difficult, traumatic experiences. If you think about them, you think Spider-Man. Spider-Man was adopted by his aunt, right? Superman was adopted. James Bond, you know James Bond was adopted? Batman, who knows what happened about, like Batman grew up with his butler. Like somehow that was okay. Maybe his butler adopted him, we don't know. Lemony Snicket, Guardians of the Galaxy, Chronicles of Narnia, right? The Pevensey kids were fostered during the war. Harry Potter. Harry Potter was fostered by the Dursleys. Terribly, mind you. That's not a great example, but they were fostered. He was fostered by this aunt and uncle. Like, it seems as if like somehow filmmakers and storytellers have discovered something really, really important. It seems as if they realized that children who grew up with these difficult, traumatic experiences are not without hope for their future. That someone's history does not necessarily determine their destiny. Yes. The thing that I think is fascinating about that is that's not just a doesn't just make for a good movie. That idea is at the very heart of Christianity. That truth is at the very heart of what we believe as Christians. That no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, there's hope for your future. Friends, you are more than the worst thing that's ever happened to you. That's true for you. I hope you believe that. That you are more than the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And that's true, not just for every person at all of our campuses, but it's also true for every person, every man, woman, and child across the Bay Area. You know, we've been in a series that we've called For Our Neighbor. And over the last few weeks, we've been just shining a light on this reality that there are some labels attached to the church. And oftentimes they're not the most positive label. Sometimes it's judgmental or it's unengaged. And so we've been talking about that over the last few weeks. And I love that we have a leadership here that said, that will not be us. That's not us at Echo Church. Those will not be our labels. We will not simply be known for what we're against. We will not simply be known for great production on Sundays. We will not be known just for great music and smoke and lights. We will be known by our love. That's going to be the label for Echo Church. We will be known for our love for God, our love for one another, and our love for the vulnerable in our area, in the Bay Area. That's going to be our, isn't that great? Yeah. You believe that? Yeah. I'm proud to be a part of a church like that. And here's the deal, as we continue this conversation today, I think it'd be important for us to understand that this is not necessarily a new conversation. It's not necessarily a new issue. This isn't just 2018. In fact, God's people have been wrestling through this for thousands of years. And I want to read to you a passage in light of that out of Isaiah chapter 1. So if you have a Bible with you, go ahead and open to the book of Isaiah. It's in the Old Testament. If you don't have a Bible, no worries, because you can just follow with me here on the screen. But in Isaiah chapter 1, We're gonna find a group of people, God's people, that were missing it. They were missing the mark. They forgot what they were meant to be known for. They lost sight of who they were being called to be and what they were called to do. And God is gonna have a message for them. And hang with me because it's gonna get a little rough on the way. All right, Isaiah chapter 1. It says this: "Why this frenzy of sacrifices?" God's asking. "Don't you think I've had my fill of burnt sacrifices, rams, and plump grain-fed calves? Don't you think I've had my fill of blood from bulls, lambs, and goats? When you come before me, whoever gave you the idea of acting like this, running here and there, doing this and that, all the sheer commotion in the place provided for worship, quit your worship charades. I can't stand your trivial religious games. Monthly conferences, weekly Sabbaths, special meetings, 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 meetings. I can't stand one more. Meetings for this, meetings for that. I hate them. You've worn me out." No, I don't think anybody's going to be posting that on Instagram today, right? That's not one you make a t-shirt with. But listen, like, this is God speaking to a people who had missed it. They were missing it. But here's what's interesting. Think about it. Apparently God's not happy with their prayers and their singing and their preaching and their gatherings and their sacrifices and their rituals. But listen, who told them to do those things? God. God told them to do those things, right? So apparently it wasn't necessarily what they were doing, it was what they were leaving out. It was what was being left undone. And so God's going to go on. He's going to say, "Wash, make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight." And then he says, and this is what you're missing. He says, "Stop doing wrong and learn to do right. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed. Take up the cause of the fatherless. Plead the case of the widow." You see, Israel was great at throwing worship parties. They were great at throwing worship gatherings. They were good at the preaching and the praying and the singing and the gathering. But their worship was not translating into concern for the poor and the marginalized. Their worship was not translating into concern for the vulnerable. And all throughout the scriptures, we're going to see that there is a direct correlation between our love for God and our heart and our concern for the poor. You see it all throughout the scriptures. So in light of that truth, we understand that here at Echo. In light of that truth, we're committed to three things here at Echo Church. And I want to share those things with you one by one. Let me go. Here's the first one. First is this. We are committed to offering God the worship that he desires. The worship that he desires. Again, what we see in Isaiah 1 is that genuine worship of God, genuine worship will always include a concern for social justice. Always. Our attitude towards the needy, in fact, is a reflection of our attitude towards God. Why is that? Well, because all throughout the scriptures, we see God identifying with those at the bottom. We see God identifying with those at the bottom. For example, in Proverbs, it says that when you insult the poor, you insult the Lord. It says when you give to the poor, you're actually giving to the Lord. And that's not just an Old Testament idea, this New Testament as well. Jesus said the same thing in Matthew 25. He said at the end of all time, I'm going to say to some, when I was hungry, man, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. You know, when I was homeless, like you brought me into your home. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you came and you visited me. Now in light of all that, like enter into the kingdom and enjoy. And then those who are listening will say, wait, hold up. Like, when did that ever happen? Like, when did we see you hungry? When did we see you thirsty? When did we see you homeless and naked and in prison? Like, when did that ever happen? And Jesus will say to them, as much as you did it to the least of these, you've done it unto me. When you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. Jesus identifies with those at the bottom. Now, every single week at all of our campuses and online, we have folks who are here just simply exploring Christianity. You're just kind of checking this thing out, trying to figure out what this thing is all about. If that's you today, I want you to see this. I want you to see just how unbelievably beautiful and unique this is. Because when Jesus said that in Matthew 25, like all the other ancient cultures and religions of that time, like their gods related to those who were at the top, not the bottom, at the top. Because their religions were based on good works, so like what you could accomplish. So if you did enough good things, then God was going to bless you, and then you'd be at the top. And so if you were at the top, it was just assumed that God had blessed you, and you were obviously in with God. And so by just the sheer nature of their beliefs, God was associated with those at the top. But then Jesus shows up, and he flips it. And he says, no. I identify with those at the bottom. I stand with the widow. So in a male-dominated culture, in a male-dominated society, Jesus shows up and says, I stand with the poor woman. Isn't that beautiful? He says, I stand with the immigrant. In a xenophobic, tribal-based society, I stand with the racial outsider in your midst. Jesus shows up and says, I stand with the orphan. In a power-seeking, power-hungry, power-worshipping society, I stand with the vulnerable child who has no power. Jesus identifies with those. Isn't that beautiful? And then Jesus says, and a clear indicator of whether or not you know me, you truly know me, is if you do the same. Now, at all of our campuses, just by show of hands, who's feeling guilty yet? All right. Okay, well, here's the deal. That's not a lot of hands in North San Jose. That's not my goal today, nor do I think that that's God's goal for today. God is not after your guilt, nor is he after simply building a bigger, like expanding your checklist. God is not after building a bigger checklist. You think if I just do all of these things, then I can get in to know God. Like then I'll know God truly and then I'll be saved. I just gotta make sure that I care for the poor. That's not what he's saying. Jesus is not saying, if you care for the poor, then you will be saved. He's saying, if you truly know me and you know what I've done for you, then you will begin to care for the poor. There's a big difference. In fact, to go back to Isaiah chapter 1, where we started. Isaiah 1, we're going to look at the very next verse. Okay, so God through the prophet has just said, you know, friends, your worship is not genuine. It's not true. You're just playing these religious games. You're not living correctly. You're not caring for the poor. You're just playing these religious games. True faith will always be characterized by a heart for the needy. And so he says those things. We just read that. And then he says this, the very next verse. Come now, let's settle this. I love that. That's like, all right, we're going to settle this thing once and for all. We're going to settle this conversation right here, he says. Come now, let's settle this, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, I will make them as white as snow. Though they are red like crimson, I'll make them as white as wool. Like, what's he getting at? He's saying, listen, when you see the grace and the love that I'm about to pour out on you in your time of greatest need, it's going to change everything. It'll completely change your heart towards those who are in need around you. I don't have to tell you anymore. Like when you, if you can let the grace penetrate your heart and your mind, like wash over you. It's going to change you from the inside out, and it's going to change your perspective towards those who are around you. Guilt can never change hearts. Only grace can do that, right? If you would just let my grace penetrate your heart and your mind, it'll change everything in the way that you view those around you and your concern for those who are around you who are in need. So let's do that for a minute. Let's just think for a moment. Let's let God's grace penetrate our heart. Let's think about for a moment what God has done for us. You see, when you think about it, God didn't just identify with the poor, like metaphorically, symbolically, did he? He literally identified with the poor. There was a moment in time where Jesus took off his robes of majesty, stepped off of his throne in heaven, walked out of the gates and stepped down into our world, and he was born in a feeding trough, in a borrowed barn, in a podunk town, to a poor set of parents. And then he would grow up, and he would say in his ministry, he would say, "Foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." In other words, he was homeless. And then at the end of his life, he would have one possession to his name. He would have the coat on his back, and what happened to that? They stripped it off of him, and they cast lots for his garments. In fact, when he was heading to Jerusalem, heading to the cross, he would ride in on a borrowed donkey, have his last meal in a borrowed room, and he was buried in a borrowed tomb. Jesus became poor for me. He became poor for me that I might be strong, or that I might be rich, rather. He became vulnerable for me that I might be strong. When I was at my lowest and my darkest place, when I thought because of all of the wounds and the scars and the mistakes from my past that I had absolutely no hope for my future, God showed up and he rescued me. When I was an orphan, he adopted me and he brought me into his family. And he gave me a hope for my future. And when I think about all that God has done for me, the fact that he didn't run from my brokenness, he ran to it. When I think about that, when I think about all that God has done for me and my need, it makes me want to do the same for others around me. When I think of the way God brought me into his home and into his family, it makes me want to do the same for vulnerable kids around me. Doesn't it? Guilt doesn't change hearts. It won't change your life. It's only grace can do that. When we get what God has done for us in our need, it'll change our perspective and our heart towards those who are in need around us. And that brings me to the second commitment we have as a church. We are committed, as a church, we are committed to presenting the watching world a dynamic picture of God's love. Okay? So our attitude towards the vulnerable, towards the poor, is a loudspeaker through which we can tell the world what we believe about God. Okay, so our mission as a church is to urgently lead people to say yes to Jesus and to passionately follow him, okay? But what does that mean, right? What does it mean to passionately follow Jesus? Well, very simply, it means to follow in his footsteps, right? It means to live like Jesus. In fact, did you know that the word Christian, that term Christian was actually coined, it simply meant little Christ. So a Christian was like a little Jesus. In fact, it was actually kind of a derogatory term. People on the outside would look in and they'd say, "Man, look at those little Jesuses walking around." Because everybody's like just living like Christ. You know, it was a derogatory term, but the fact is history shows us that it was for that very reason why the early church just blew up. It exploded in growth. In fact, did you know that the early Christian church grew on average by 40% per decade for 300 years? Isn't that crazy? You think, no, it's not crazy because, I mean, think about who they had at the pulpit, right? They had Peter, they had James, they had John, right? They got these people who have been there like since the beginning. Like think about how dynamic their messages would have been. It's like eyewitness testimony. Of course it blew up. But friends, that's not how it happened. It didn't happen because of these big gatherings around this one preacher. They couldn't do what we're doing today where they all kind of gather together, these big gatherings. They couldn't do that because of persecution. They'd be persecuted. So their gatherings oftentimes have been much smaller or in secret. So how did it blow up? It didn't blow up because the outsiders were watching what the Christians did on a Sunday in a service. It blew up because the outsiders were watching what the Christians did in their everyday lives, the way that they loved one another, and in particular, the way that they loved the poor. In fact, I'll give you an example of that. Just one example from history. I'll tell you about a guy named Julian. Julian was one of the last Roman emperors, and he was just watching this explosive movement of Christianity, watching it spread like wildfire across the Roman Empire. And he didn't like it, and he wanted to revive paganism. And so he would build out these like pagan temples and spruce them up and then invite everybody in. The problem was everybody was becoming a Christian. And so at one point, he actually wrote a letter to his friend who was a pagan priest, and we still have record of what he said. This is what he said. He says, "Nothing has contributed to the progress of the superstition of these Christians as their charity to strangers. These impious Galileans provide not only for their own poor, but for ours as well." So listen to what he's saying, right? So here's Julian, right? One of the last Roman emperors. He is one of the leading political figures. He's watching Christianity spread like wildfire, and he studied Christianity. He's trying to figure out what's behind like the momentum of this movement. And if you were to ask him today, like, Julian, like, what is it? What is it that's making this explode? He's not going to say, "Well, look how fun their kids ministry is. It's amazing. Like, look how fit their pastor is." What's he going to say? "Look at the way they take care of the poor. Look at the way they take care of the poor." Like, they're not just taking care of like their own poor, they're taking care of our poor as well. Like, it's not just the Jews, it's the Greeks, it's the Romans. They're taking care of people who are complete strangers to them. These people, like, they're so loving and generous and hospitable. It's making their movement absolutely irresistible. Like, their movement is unstoppable. And then let's fast forward to today. A few years ago, the Barna Research Group put out a study that said that the San Francisco Bay Area is America's most unchurched metropolitan region. And what's more, we're also America's most de-churched metropolitan region, which means not only are many of our neighbors not that interested in attending a church for the first time, those who have been a part of churches are leaving it in droves. So the question, of course, then is why? Can I suggest that maybe it's not because our Sunday services aren't good enough or our kids' ministries aren't fun enough? Could it be, and I'm not pointing fingers at anybody here, I'm raising my own hand on this. Could it be because at times as Christians in the Bay Area, we've lost sight of the poor? We've lost sight of the vulnerable. Could it be that because at times as Christians in the Bay Area, if we're honest with ourselves, that our lives have been less than compelling to a watching world? I want you to know that at Echo Church, we're committed to changing that. We're committed to changing that label. Are you with me?
Yeah.
All right. So that brings me to our third commitment. And our third commitment is this, that we are committed to ensuring that the vulnerable in the Bay Area experience the love that they deserve, and in particular, vulnerable children. Okay, a few years ago, social services approached us, and they said, "Hey, we have an idea." They pitched us this idea. They said, "We would like to partner with you." And they said, "We would like you to consider spearheading a faith alliance, mobilizing churches in the Bay Area to help us address a growing crisis in the foster care system." Okay? They said there are more kids entering into foster care today than there are homes that are ready to care for them. They said, "Would you help us with this?" And so we said yes. And we launched a movement 3 years ago, this month. This is our third birthday. We launched a movement that we call Foster the Bay. And I'm really excited to share with you that over the last 3 years, what started with one church has grown now to 49 Bay Area churches. Isn't that awesome? Check this out. That's 49 churches all committed to the same vision that one day there will be a waiting list of families rather than a waiting list of children in need of a home. Isn't that awesome? All right, so it's unbelievable. As a result of these churches already getting engaged together, we've already seen 120 children placed into Foster the Bay homes. Isn't that awesome? You should clap for that. Come on. That's awesome. That's amazing. Guys, listen, here's what you should be excited about. God has birthed a movement right here that is sweeping across the Bay Area, that is changing the label of the church. It's changing the reputation of the church. In fact, I want to invite you to see what God's doing. Just get a glimpse of it. Take a look at this video.
Today in my city.
Today.
Today.
Today in my city.
Today in my city, a child will be removed from their home due to abuse or neglect.
Another child will enter the foster care system, and another child will be placed on a list of children waiting for a home.
I've seen the headlines and studied the statistics.
They say the future is grim.
They say the future is grim.
But we've got good news.
But we've got good news.
We believe that God redeems the most hopeless situations.
That he brings beauty from ashes and turns mourning into dancing.
We believe God is near to the brokenhearted.
That he brings joy in the midst of grief and gives dreams in place of despair.
We believe these children matter to God and that he cares about their futures.
We believe that he's ready to write a new chapter in their stories.
The Bible says that God sets the lonely in family, so we know that he longs for children in the foster care system to be placed into loving, supportive homes.
We believe there's a church for every child.
Foster the Bay is a coalition of churches.
A coalition of churches.
Is a coalition of churches.
Foster the Bay is a coalition of churches.
Committed to providing a loving home for every child in the foster care system.
We dream of the day when every church will rise up and answer God's call to care for vulnerable children.
We dream of the day when the long list of children waiting for a home will be replaced with even longer lists of families willing to open their hearts.
We dream of the day when our cities will be transformed because the church is known as a community where abused and neglected children
are cared for as beloved sons and daughters.
As beloved sons and daughters.
As we move toward that day, we will pray for these children and their families.
We will pray for social workers and judges.
We will inspire and equip our churches to step forward
as foster families and support friends.
We will partner with government leaders and county agencies to make this vision a reality.
We will press on until there are more than enough families to meet the need.
We will always protect, always trust, always hope, and always persevere.
We will believe.
We will dream.
We will love.
We are.
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 We are Foster the Bay.
It's awesome to see what God has done already over the last few years, but we know this is just the beginning. There's much more to be done. In fact, we just launched in San Francisco this last spring, and as we were getting ready to launch, I had a meeting with a woman from an organization called Safe and Sound. And Safe and Sound is contracted by the city of San Francisco to specifically work with kids in foster care that have experienced human trafficking. So kids have been sexually exploited. And she told me in this meeting, she said, Philip, there are 69 open cases of kids in foster care in San Francisco that have experienced human trafficking. So I asked her, I said, man, how many of those kids have you been able to find a home for in the city? You know how many she said? 12. 12 kids. As we were finishing up our meeting, she said, Philip, can I share one more thing with you? I said, sure. And she said, but the thing is, I don't want you to think I'm crazy. And I said, oh, I'm not going to think you're crazy. It's fine. And so she said, well, listen, like recently I was working on this one particular case, and what this girl went through was particularly horrific. She said, it was so bad, like I couldn't shake it at the end of the day. I couldn't leave it at the office. I was taking it home with me every night. She said, in the midst of that time, I had this dream. And in my dream, there was this house, and this house was on fire, and it was burning down. And she said, these kids that I work with are in the second story of this house, and they were jumping out of the second story window. She said, you have to understand that the suicidal tendencies for kids that I work with are really, really high. In fact, just with foster youth alone, suicidal tendencies are 4 times higher for a youth in foster care than the average youth. But it's even higher with this population. So you got to understand the suicidal tendency is really, really high. So these boys were jumping out. She said, and I was on the ground trying to catch them before they hit the ground. She said, but in my despair, like there was too many kids jumping out. Like I couldn't catch them all in time. She said, but in my dream, I turned around and I looked, and there was this whole crowd of people running up behind me, and they started catching these girls and boys with me. She said, right after that, I heard Foster the Bay was coming to town. She said, I want you to know that I think that this crowd of people coming up behind me were the churches of San Francisco. So after I picked my jaw up off the ground, we walked out of that meeting, and we were just absolutely convinced that God is behind what's happening in the Bay Area through this movement that started right here. And we've already mobilized now 10 churches in San Francisco to start addressing that crisis. The thing is, though, that the need is not just up in the city. It's right here in Santa Clara County as well. In fact, you know, we currently need 200 more foster families to meet the current need in Santa Clara County. In our county, in our cities, we need 200 more foster families. I want to take a moment. I know that across all of our campuses, there are individuals and families that have stepped forward and have already joined what's happening with Foster the Bay. And you've begun to open up your homes. You've opened up your hearts. You've given generously to Echo so that we can continue to put resources behind this movement. Like, you've already gotten engaged in really meaningful ways. I want to take a moment. I want to honor you for the step that you've taken, the generosity and the hospitality and the love that you've poured out. But the fact is, there's more to be done. And I think perhaps that God might be stirring in some of you to get involved in some way. And if that's you today, I want you to know there's a couple ways that you can do that. Number one, you could actually take that step, that big, bold step to actually become a foster parent. You can open up your heart and your home to a child who's in need. I think there's probably some of you who have thought about doing that in the past, but maybe you're a little bit nervous, you're a little bit scared. And if that's you today, I want you to know, like, I get it. I understand. The fact is, fostering is probably the hardest thing we've ever done, my wife and I. It's probably the most difficult thing we've ever done. It's not easy having a child come into your home and you start caring for them and you pour your life out into them, you pour your love into them for months or years at a time, and they become like your own daughter or your own son. And then one day they get picked up and they go back home to their biological family and you think you'll never see them again. It's like a death of a child. It sucks. It absolutely sucks. We've been through that. It's not easy parenting alongside a government agency, as you can imagine. It's not easy parenting a child that has walked through trauma. Every kid in foster care has gone through trauma, every one of them. And so sometimes kids who experience trauma will sometimes, in their pain and their confusion, act out of that trauma. And that's hard. It's hard to parent a child who's walked through some of the things that they've walked through. It's not easy. At the same time, fostering has also been one of the greatest decisions my wife and I have ever made. We used to ask, when we were going through the process, we used to ask, like, what is this going to cost us if we do this? If we say yes to this, what will this cost us? You know what we ask now, 4 years later? What would it have cost us if we would have said no? Like, what would we have missed out on? All this laughter and memories and these great relationships and this opportunity that we had to extend God's love to these kids who so desperately needed to experience it. I think that God's calling some of you to take a bold, brave step today and to learn more about becoming a foster parent. But that's not for all of you. And there's other roles to be played. In fact, did you know that nationwide, 50% of foster families won't make it past the first year? Because it's just really hard. But you know what changes that stat? What changes the retention? Is if a foster family does it in the context of community. If they take that journey with support along the way. And so I think that God might be leading some of you today to take a step to become what we call a support friend. And a support friend is somebody who says, man, I deeply care about this. Like, this bothers me. My heart breaks for these kids who have been through so much. Like, I totally want to take this journey with somebody. Like, I would love to foster, but in this season of my life, I can't. But I can support somebody who can. And so I can babysit a couple times a month, or I can drop off meals a couple times a month. I could pray on a regular basis and send encouraging texts. I could give a ride once a week. I would covenant myself to a family and take that journey with them. I'll support them along the way. As a foster dad who has a foster family who has a team of four support friends, I can't begin to tell you how meaningful it has been for us and how incredibly important it has been for us to have support along the way. In fact, I can pretty confidently say we may not be here 4 years later doing this if it were not for our support friends, which means we wouldn't be adopting our little girl. And when we do adopt our little girl next month, guess who we've invited to be in the courtroom? Janelle and Colin Breen, Jenny and Jason Williams, Aaron and Lorraine Lee, Mark and Maxine Bagoy. Our support friends, these people who have taken this journey with us, who have walked through the good days and walked through the terrible days. Perhaps God is calling some of you today to take a step to learn more about being a support friend. If either of those roles interest you, either a foster parent or a support friend, here's what I want to ask you to do. On your seats at all of our campuses, there is a connection card. I want you to grab that right now, and I want you to just fill that out. And on the back of that card, I want you to write the word foster. F-O-S-T-E-R. Even if you're interested in the support friend role, what that's going to do is it's going to let us know that you want to receive an email about some giving you some information about an upcoming meeting we have where you can learn more about those roles. Okay, we actually have a meeting at our Sunnyvale campus coming up in about a week and a half. We'd love for you to be a part of that and learn more about those two specific roles. Again, we've been talking as a church. What would it look like for us to change the labels? What if Echo Church was known? What if the label at Echo Church was this? That we were a place, we were a church where abused and neglected children became beloved sons and daughters. How would that impact our influence in the city if that were our label? That we were the place where abused and neglected kids became beloved sons and daughters. Let me close with this. As you walked in at all of our campuses, you were given a key. Can you take that key out? If you could, just go ahead and take that key and put that in your hand. Somebody asked me if this is all for cars. I'm not Oprah. You don't get a car. You don't get a car. You don't get a car. But take that key in your hand. Listen, I know of a guy who's a pastor today, but grew up in foster care. And he says that the most meaningful, like one of those pivotal moments in his life was when his foster parents gave him a key to the home. He said, in that moment, I'm home. I'm not a stranger to these people. I'm not an outsider anymore to these people. Like, I have a family that loves me, and I have a place that I belong. Here's the deal. I want you to walk away with two things today. And the first is this, is that God is offering you a key today. He's offering you a key to his home. No matter where you've been, no matter what you've walked through, no matter what's happened to you, no matter your mistakes in the past, he's offering you a key to, so he's inviting you into his family. Your history does not necessarily need to determine your destiny. There's a new start today. You have the opportunity to step into his family, adopted as a son or a daughter of the living God. All you need to do is simply say yes. Yes to his forgiveness, and yes to his entrance into your life to walk with him from this day forward. He's offering you a key. And I hope that some of you would say yes today. The second thing, though, is this. For those of us that have said yes to Jesus, in the very same way, I want you to understand this, in the very same way that God offered you a key to his heart and to his love, he's calling you to do the same for others. For some of you, that might actually mean giving your literal door key to a child who's in need of a home. But for every one of us, all of us who are followers of Jesus, he's calling you to let someone in, to give them access to the love that you've experienced. Does somebody come to mind, in fact? Somebody that needs to experience that? Does your key already have a name? With your key in your hand, could you just do me a favor? If you're willing, I'm going to close with a blessing. Would you just be willing to extend your hand out like this? Your hands out like this. At all of our campuses, extend your hands out like this. With every head bowed and every eye closed, I'm going to read a blessing over you. This is an old Franciscan blessing. I'm going to read this over us. May God bless you with a restless discomfort about easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may seek truth boldly and love deep within your heart. May God bless you with a holy anger towards injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you may tirelessly work for justice, freedom, and peace among all peoples. May God bless you with a gift of tears to shed with those who suffer from pain, rejection, starvation, or the loss of all that they cherish, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and transform their pain into joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness today to believe that you really can make a difference in this world, so that you're able, with God's grace, to do what others claim cannot be done. Amen.